Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And another foul on Ward. His third for setting a screen.
Because of physical play, although George Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Pick and roll. And a foul. Offensive foul coming up. Dead battle box. Get it right there.
Izzo dying for a moving screen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very unexpected special edition of the Moving Screen Podcast. I'm Brendan Quinn of The Athletic, here with Dylan Burkhart of umhoops.com. We're both going to have to keep our voice down a little bit in this pod because I am in a hotel in Brentwood, New York, about 10 miles east of Bethpage, the Black Course at Bethpage, where I'll be covering the PGA Championship this week, and Dylan with the big time remote call in. Dylan is in a basement in Barcelona, Spain, where he's on vacation, or was on vacation. How you doing, pal?
Oh, we're here. I mean, this is the epitome of an emergency podcast right here.
This was a difficult one to coordinate with. What's our time difference here?
6 hours.
6 hours. So it is
6 a.m. in Barcelona.
6 a.m. Barcelona time. It is midnight Eastern here in New York. Obviously a monstrous day in college basketball. I wouldn't even just say Michigan. John Beilein off to the Cleveland Cavaliers after 12 years, as everyone knows. We have a lot to talk about, both John's tenure, of course, and what's next for Michigan. First, though, I think we should each share our stories of how we found out the news in our various positions on the globe. Where were you, Dylan, where you found out?
I was on the beach in Barcelona. It was about, it would have been about 3 o'clock, laying in the sun, and all of a sudden got a little alert. It's hard to keep track of what time it is there, but 9 a.m. it was about, right? And that changed my day pretty quickly. How about you?
Did you race back to the hotel? What'd you do?
Well, took a little. We had to get to the metro. We had to get back.
Oh God!
And then get to the hotel, and then get to the hotel rooftop bar and write a little bit there. That was the game plan.
How was that international plan on the phone?
It's not as bad as your experiences have been,
Easy. Unnecessary. All right. I was sitting on the tarmac at DTW, and you know when they'll give you the little mini announcements where it's, we're second up here for takeoff, ladies and gentlemen, blah, blah, blah. Right when we were one plane away, basically getting ready to rumble down the runway, I saw the tweet from Woj, and immediately started ripping off text messages, hoping that someone would respond within the next 2 minutes before I lost my signal. the poor woman sitting next to me was very confused as to
why you were losing your mind.
What was happening? But yeah, you know, got it done, got it confirmed in the air, and all good. So those are our stories of woe, but we definitely wanted to drop a pod because this is a big one. So I guess, where do you want to start, Dylan? It's a big piece of news with lots of angles to come at it from.
Yeah, you want to start with, I guess, how surprised were you or not, and okay, kind of your sense on Beilein leaving?
I'll say this. I was surprised that he got an offer right now. At 66 years old, having a double bypass last year, you know, this doesn't mean that he's in any, like, his credentials or anything like that, but, like, I just was maybe a little bit surprised that an NBA team was willing to go for it right now. That he took the job, I'm not in any way surprised, not in any way stunned. I thought last year that if the Pistons made the offer, he would have taken it. Said as much multiple times, wrote as much multiple times. I know everyone loves to operate under the theory that, you know, this couldn't possibly, you know, John Beilein would never leave Michigan. I never bought into that. And I think that he is a guy who is defined by proving himself and challenges. He's got, I don't know if it's an inferiority complex or what, but, like, he's got this just inner thing about him where he's always going to want the next challenge. And sometimes it's in his own mind. This case, it's not. It's a chance to coach in the NBA. It's something he's always wanted. And it's, you know, 66. If not now, then never.
Yeah, how many more chances are you going to get? Yep, so exactly.
What else does he have to prove? Go do it. And for people who say, well, he didn't win a national championship, that's the challenge. You don't stay at a job because just to win a national championship, because it's really damn hard and there's way too many variables that are completely out of your control.
Yeah, and I look at it as the timing is surprising, and I guess it wasn't sort of a long, drawn-out process with the Cavs, at least publicly, mm-hmm. So you didn't have that factor. But you look at everything that happened last summer and I guess what kind of transpired, and it seemed that he was every bit serious about taking that job. Mm-hmm. So it's not really surprising that he would take a job that comes up, and it's 2 hours away. I mean, it all kind of fits, even if no one was really actively thinking about the breadcrumbs at the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So here's the timeline. Beilein spoke to Ward Manuel on May 1st or 2nd, and at that time, John told Ward that he was going to enter into some conversations with NBA teams that were interested. He did not say the Cavs. He did not give any specifics of teams. It was just he's going to talk to some NBA teams. What I think at that time, I'm not sure. I have not spoken to John, but at that immediate time, I don't think, like, the Cavs might have contacted him at that point, but it was not in a point of it being a real, you know, definite possibility at that moment. Where I think the Cavs made the right call was when they decided that John was the guy, they acted fast. And it was basically a couple quick days interview, you're the guy. No, none of the drag out, none of the bullshit with the Pistons stuff. You know, no one was able to report it, so it didn't turn into what it did last year when Woj reported the interview on
exactly.
Friday. This was a quick strike. And as someone who is really close to John and kind of knows a lot about this process on the NBA side, told me was, you know, the second you give Beilein time to overthink it is when things can go a little sideways. So, you know, they went after John, they identified it, it turned into a real conversation, bing, bang, boom, hired.
Done.
You know, if it had gone for 2 weeks, you might not be having this conversation today.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I guess where do you, probably what most people listening want to talk focus on is, I guess, what comes next for Michigan. What do you make of the situation? Obviously, at this point, Michigan basketball basically is John Beilein. Over the last 12 years, he has really established his program. And I guess when you look at next steps, do you look, I find it very interesting to look at some of like the discussion about next coaching candidates and stuff like that. And I don't know that you really want to find someone the most like John Beilein or someone to continue what he did, because I don't really know that that is possible.
No.
So I wonder, I guess, what do you think should be kind of the focus when you look at next steps?
So, I mean, a couple things here. Yeah, John's not replicable. And there's no, oh, this guy kind of has his disposition or runs a similar offense, so do that.
Exactly.
That's just, that, it has never worked that way in any field of work. And when it comes to identifying the candidates and who's the best hire and all this, all that's moot. None of that shit matters. The only thing that matters is what does Ward Manuel want. Like, we can sit here and
True.
Say who they should hire and who what those qualifications should look like, but all of that amounts to nothing. Because the only thing that really matters is what does Ward want. And he has a search committee to do background searches, and I don't know if he's going to have any kind of advisory board of guys, you know, alumni or prominent basketball folk from Michigan history to kind of work as a counterbalance to his own work. But, you know, this thing's Ward. He's the athletic director.
Yep.
And for all the people, you know, wanting to throw out this huge name and that huge name, it, in a lot of cases, it probably, it might not even matter if that person does or doesn't want the job. And it can be any massive name from your Billy Donovan to your Mark Few to your whoever. It's just as important if Ward is actually going to give that person $7 million.
Yep. That's pretty much sums up the, I mean, that's where we're at. And I guess now it's sort of the timing is obviously quite a tricky situation when Michigan's roster is pretty much in flux, you could say. You have recruiting going on. You have now potential re-recruiting. So I don't know. How do you want to even like dive into, I guess, do you want to go into – we didn't really plan this podcast.
No, we did not. Well, I think understandably so.
Where do we want to?
Let's go into possible candidates, and then we'll go into roster, and then we'll go into Beilein's legacy, and then everyone can go to sleep. Where I guess you can go sleep.
I can wake up and get on a train.
So the. I think the home run hire is Billy Donovan. That said, I do not think Billy Donovan will be the next head coach at Michigan. I think it's going to be too much money. I think there's way too many things that need to happen, and it's just not that realistic. Basically, all of the top names that I think would be leading the conversation in terms of kind of a dream scenario for Michigan, so Jay Wright, Tony Bennett, Chris Beard,
Brad Stevens.
Mark Few, Brad Stevens, Billy Donovan. I don't see any of those guys happening. I think in a lot of cases it's too much money, and I think in other cases it's just not an actual reality for the guy who is on the other end of the offer. So for the purposes of this conversation, I'm basically ruling out those guys. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think just about any name you listed off would be a can't miss home run hire, right? Like, they're some of the best coaches around, all have established college credentials, whatnot. The too much money thing, like, what is too much money for Michigan? Just how much too much money they want to spend. That's a clear distinction, right? But other than that, I think it's obviously given the timing where everything is at, it'd be tricky to kind of for any of that to really happen. I think that you have to look into it and see if it would be a possibility, but obviously probably not the most pertinent to discuss off the bat.
You dropped out there for a second. Say the last thing.
Oh, I was just saying that obviously those would be home run candidates, yeah, but you'd have to really thread the needle, I guess, so to speak, to make something like that happen, and it probably isn't pertinent to discuss until...
Yeah, but I mean, just look at it this way. All right, let's just be pragmatic about things. The 2017 season or something like that, April 2017, one of the last revenue reports that came out, Michigan basketball's profit was $7.8 million. This isn't football. This is not just a bottomless coffer where they can pay Jim Harbaugh $8 million because the program's making $90 million. My opinion, and just having been around the program and the realities of college athletics, if Michigan basketball's making $7.8 million, I don't see them paying a basketball coach $7 million. It's my opinion.
That's fair. I don't even think it matters what the program makes. It's just hard to... It'll be interesting when you think about where the program was when Beilein came, mm-hmm, where it is now. You're not looking for a rebuilding job. You're looking to, I guess, take the next step in a hire, which is a different boat. And there's been a lot more consistent winning over the last decade.
Sure.
But it's also still Michigan basketball. So you have to kind of weigh those two things against each other, I guess. And that really kind of comes down to how pivotal this hire will be.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe I just get surprised and they just throw $8 million at God knows who and jump into the conversation with, you know, your Dukes and your Kentuckys. But let's not forget, John was making, I think, 3.9 in his latest deal, despite being one of the 5 or 10 best coaches in the country. Those numbers have gone up dramatically, even in 1 year. You look at the deal Chris Beard just got at Texas Tech. These things are in a different conversation than what they were before. I don't know how far Michigan wants to go into that conversation. It's really going to be interesting to see. And really, it might be a moot point, because if there's no realistic candidate that warrants that kind of money, then whatever. It's neither here nor there. So of that next tier of candidates, is there anyone that jumps out to you?
The name that I just kind of... looking through everyone's, I do appreciate how many, I think probably every college basketball coach has somehow been linked to the job at this point. But I really like Mike White at Florida.
Yep.
I think he's been consistent as a winner at a small school. He has high major experience, involved in a lot of the same kind of recruitments that Michigan is. Seems like an intriguing direction to go. What do you think of Mike White?
I like Mike White. I like that he comes from a football school and knows what it's kind of like to walk into a situation like Michigan. I like that Ward Manuel knows his father and has known him. And there's kind of a lot that could fit there. I think that does seem like a really decent option. And he's impressive in press conferences. I like the stuff they run. He can recruit. They haven't had, at least as far as I've seen, I haven't seen their names mixed up in any of the stuff going on around the game, which is a prerequisite in this situation. So, yeah, I think Mike White is going to be at the front of this conversation.
All right. Who caught your eye? Let's hear your first name.
Well, I mean, White is right up there. We can just go one by one for days here. I do think that Juwan Howard will be in the mix here. I think that would be probably seen as an interesting situation, is interesting candidate, and someone who, if he wants it, it would put Michigan in a really interesting situation of
you know, dealing with this kind of guy who has a iconic past and could probably really do a hell of a job recruiting. Do you say no? You know, if Juwan expresses real interest in it, do you say no?
It's a really interesting. He's obviously very well respected in NBA coaching circles, and he's been what, 6 years, I think, as an assistant in Miami, something like that. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
I think that people are a little – I think it's important to point out, like, what Penny Hardaway is recruiting everyone out there right now in college basketball and landing whoever he wants. It is important to point out that Penny was an AAU coach and had a lot of connections to these kids. Howard obviously does as well. His kids are playing AAU ball. I think his older kid plays for Mac Urban Fire. But I don't think you would have a lot of intrigue as a recruiter there. But is he ready to be a college head coach? Does he want to go all in on that route? I assume that he probably ultimately wants to be a NBA head coach.
I would think.
Right, so that's kind of a tricky balance there, right? What do you think that could work?
I have no idea if it could work. I don't know enough about Juwan or anything, but like I'm just trying to think of who are realistic possibilities here. Is Juwan any less realistic than, you know, whatever middling coach you want to say outside of that top tier of guys? I think he would be just as realistic as any of those guys. Like, personally, I'd be interested in, I think Ed Cooley's a hell of a coach. I don't think he gets this job. I don't even know if he would get an interview. But, like, that's the point being, like, that's kind of the pool of coaches you start talking about when you get out of that top pack, you know, a Bobby Hurley. Bobby Hurley, I don't see his demeanor and disposition working at Michigan. Don't think it's a fit. Don't think that's a direction Ward would go in, but, like, that's a name here. I think Wojo is probably a realistic name to possibly get an interview. Like, I see his disposition kind of fitting Michigan a little bit more, and coming from a place like Marquette as well. I could see the tires getting kicked on Steve Prohm. What about you? Any other names?
Good morning.
Oh, yeah. Who are our Spanish friends? Let's get their opinions on this.
I'm really intrigued, I would say, by Steve Prohm, just given his what he's done at Iowa State and I guess kind of the way that they play, some of the talent they've brought in there. That would be an interesting path to go down. Where do you fall in his kind of resume?
I mean, I like a guy who wins at a place that prioritizes basketball at the level that Iowa State does. They've recruited well. And, you know, I think that's a pretty solid move going from a Murray State to an Iowa State and actually keeping a good thing going. You see how hard it is. Like a case, I'm trying to think of a mid-major to high-major guy who goes into a successful situation that kind of had trouble keeping it at that level. I'm having nothing offhand, but the point being, like, it's really hard to be like the hot mid-major coach that goes into a place that's winning and keeping it winning. And he's done that. And I think that's pretty successful. That's a pretty successful picture to look at when looking at the Michigan situation, that you're going into a place that's had this success. This is not a total rebuild. It's, if anything, don't screw it all up, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. You look at a lot of coaches, like, especially at mid-major levels, where they're the next coach up, and it's kind of almost like a Butler situation where Holtman was like the next coach up and kept Butler moving in the right direction and then got the big jump up to Ohio State. It's hard to, I guess, evaluate how much of Prohm's success stems from the base that was kind of there from Hoiberg, but I think that the fact that he could keep it moving in the right direction would certainly be encouraging in that regard. Do you look for, like, would you prioritize kind of someone who's built a program or someone who's run a program in that sense?
I think I'd prioritize more someone who has run a program. At this level, Michigan, I don't know if Michigan, man, that's a really hard question because Michigan's in such this weird spot where it's had all this success. It's not, on paper, it's not a rebuild, but when you look at the roster and what actually has to be done to win games in the next 3 years, it is kind of a, it's not an easy turnover. This is not grab the keys and just go. They're losing three NBA, probably losing three NBA players this year. And when you look at the current Michigan roster, one of the interesting, and we'll get into this shortly here, but one of the interesting things about the roster is when it's the system, right? Beilein's offense, Jokic's defense. Yeah, sure. You know, you put these guys out there, they'll win games. They should be fine. Just chug right along. Keep doing what Michigan does. You take this roster and put it with some unproven coach, there could be some issues there. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I think I want the established coach, the guy who, you know, there's always something to be said for just hire the best coach, you know, the guy who is, and that's what they did with Beilein. That maybe is the real recipe here.
Well, yeah, I think probably the most simple thing we could possibly say is, yeah, hire the best coach. That's some pretty obvious advice. But no, I agree. Where do you fall?
No, but I don't
on...
mean, you know, there's a difference between that and hiring just the sexy recruiter or the guy who's the great public speaker or the guy who's going to win the press conference or whatever, you know, the program
guy. Yeah, of course.
That
I think.
Actually coaching the game.
Where do you fall on Porter Moser's name?
No. No chance. There is no, absolutely no chance.
Okay. That was a
where
a
is
harsh,
this com- where is Porter Moser coming from? People have been tweeting about Porter Moser all day, and I think this is either his agent or somebody is. It ain't happening.
What about some more like, I would say, established coaches who you might have a chance. Like, where would you go fall on, like, Mike Bray? Any chance there? Kick the tires?
I think Mike Bray's worth kicking the tires on. The thing is, he's close to retirement age. I have no idea what his, you know, Notre Dame doesn't make their contracts public, so we have no idea what Bray's buyout would be or how many years was left in his deal, but it's a guy who's won a lot of games, and he's won a lot of games at a football or a place that is, you know, football first, and everything is always second, and that's an important thing. Don't forget that the athletic director at Michigan's a former football player at Michigan, and he's making a basketball hire. I think that is going to be high on the list of things. What about a guy like? I don't see this happening for a number of reasons, but Chris Mack's name is pretty prevalent here.
Yeah. He's making $4 million already.
Yeah.
He just took the Louisville job. Two, I don't really see it as a perfect fit, really. Mm-hmm. I think he has a lot of Midwest ties, stuff like that. But I don't see it as the perfect fit, really. Do you?
I mean, if he were still at Xavier, 110%. His buyout as of May 1st was $12 million. So let's guess that's down to what, 9 or something like that now. Yeah,
I'd rather give.
I don't see that happening.
I'd rather give Matt Painter $4.5 million than Chris Mack.
Fair. I can't see Painter leaving, but
no. But yeah, you're going to pay that kind of money, I'd rather get a coach that I think is a lot better of a coach at this point.
Matt Painter's buyout as of 4/1/19 was a whopping $16.4 million. So, don't see that happen.
So, no, but it's in the same. It's yeah, like yeah, if yeah. you're going to. I'm just saying, in those kind of candidates, I'm a no on Shaka Smart or Greg Marshall.
Likewise.
any sort of under the radar candidates that you like? Like, got to be some guys like with some strong Philly ties that you
want to
hype
available.
Up in this conversation.
Phil Martelli is available.
Oh God.
No, I mean, I'm not really sure I see an under the radar hire being someone out of left field. I'm not sure I see that happening.
Frank Martin?
I could see Frank Martin. I've seen Bob McKillop's name out there. I don't see that happening whatsoever. I'm trying to think of some of the other names I've seen out there that I've kind of been like, what are we even talking about here, people? There's been some very interesting job boards put together. Do you have your candidate list up? Is that up on UM Hoops?
Not yet. That'll be coming today. Yesterday some kind of just looking back on Beeline and making sense of everything that happened yesterday. But we'll get more into coaching candidates and hopefully kind of dive into the pros and cons of the different candidates who are out there and try to kind of evaluate them in that regard. You know, you got an athletic coaching hot board coming up here?
No. If I have something to report, I'll report it. Not really down on the throwing darts at a list of names.
There have been a lot of darts thrown just from what I've seen on the internet already.
Lots of darts thrown. I mean, Nate Oates, not happening. Jamie Dixon, not happening. Kevin Keats, not happening. This is the one of the interesting things with this whole, the air around college basketball is, you know, any guy who's had their program listed, I think, is off the board immediately. As far as this conversation goes, what do you think of Michigan's current assistants, and what do you think of LaValle Jordan?
Here's what my problem is. I come back to the idea of you're not hiring someone to keep just carrying on John Beilein's program because no one can really do that. John Beilein's program is John Beilein's program, right? So if you hire one of the assistant coaches or if you hire LaValle Jordan, are you really excited about the direction they're going to take the program next, or are you just hoping to keep things in place in the meantime, right? Like, I can buy that you can maybe scrap together a more coherent roster for the next season if you maybe stay in-house, something like that, but are you really going to be able to build to something better going down that path? Where do you fall?
I think that's a great point that you make. The only thing I would add is that, you know, I'm not sure I could see someone without head coaching experience getting this job unless his name is Juwan Howard. Everyone likes the three current assistants. I could very well see Jaklic going with Beilein to Cleveland. I could see a guy like DeAndre Haynes getting like a player development coach job with Cleveland. I could see Saadi getting a spot there. Could certainly see John Sanderson going along to Cleveland as well. But as far as those guys getting the head job at Michigan, I just don't see it. It's a big jump. It's a big job. So as far as LaValle goes, look, everyone likes LaValle too, but he's 16-20. In 2 years in the Big East at Butler, and the program is coming off its first losing season since like 2009 or something. He's at a place that expects to win, and while I don't think he's on the hot seat or anything at Butler, I don't know if he's done enough to warrant getting the Michigan job yet.
I would
just
say no.
If you take the Michigan ties or the Beilein mentorship, whatever, out of the conversation, is anyone talking about LaValle Jordan for the Michigan job?
No.
Right. So I just don't see it.
Yeah, I agree completely. It just doesn't make sense. You're hiring a new coach. If it was the middle of the season or like you needed an interim coach, like maybe you go to that situation, but almost always you're going to see it work out that you want to hire a new head coach, not bump up an assistant coach.
And you know, I just see, I imagine Ward Manuel going with somebody who has experience and has a proven track record over, you know, if you can get Mike White, which I don't think is that unreasonable, you're not going to hire one of the assistants or LaValle over him just because of, you know, this let's keep the beeline era alive. That's just not logical.
Completely agree.
Okay.
So what else do you want to dive into?
Well, one thing I'll be keeping a close eye on here is the transfer portal. It's a matter of reality here in college basketball now that anytime you see a job change, the tide also has some bodies in it, and those guys end up in the transfer portal within a day, 2 days, 5 days of the departure. I think you could see a couple names pop up, not sure who, but certainly wouldn't rule it out. This is mainly a, you know, heads up to Michigan fans that that's probably coming, I would think.
Yeah, you also have to watch for recruiting fallout, both 2019 signees. Mm-hmm. There could be something to watch for there. At the end of the day, I think some of that stuff, while it obviously has a tangible impact on the coming season, the most important thing is hiring the right coach and finding that, because whoever you hire is going to bring people in. People will leave based on who you hire. People will not leave. I saw all these people tweeting yesterday about class of 2020 recruits that think X, Y, and Z. Class of 2020 recruits are going to be based solely on whoever the new head coach is. Yeah. So, but that's all going to start over. That's just the reality of the situation for the most part. So there will be kind of shifts up and down, but you're going to have a wave of new recruiting momentum whenever the new head coach does come in. So it's kind of one of those things that's going to naturally, I would say, play itself out.
Right.
But Michigan's in a weird spot here where they have a kind of a short roster to even start with.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. It's May 14th. I will be stunned if there's not a new head coach by the end of this month. I think it takes 2 weeks and this thing's done. I can't see it dragging on into June. This is bad business, and I think Ward gets it done before that. But let's say if you're losing the three players who are going pro, right?
Yep.
So that's two openings on the roster there, right?
Yep.
You could potentially lose, say, being conservative, two players off the roster. You could lose one of your commits who are coming in, either Pajama or
Jalen Wilson.
So you could lose one of them. You could lose both of them. Like, real quick, you could suddenly have 8 scholarship players going into June, for all you know. And depending on who is left on the staff to keep this thing together, things can go sideways. Things can get really crazy really, really quickly. You know, in a perfect world for Michigan, you're able to do something where you hire a coach who maybe retains a guy like DeAndre, Saadi, Luke, you know, one of those guys or something like that, has a great relationship with Xavier Simpson and Isaiah Livers right off the bat. Those guys hold things together and you're able to kind of keep this thing intact. That's a perfect scenario, which is possible. It can also go the other way, where you can be down to 8 players going into June and you're suddenly trying to fill roster spots when the transfer pool is pretty much emptied out of, you know, the marquee players. There's still some guys out there, but, you know, a lot of guys have already found their homes. There's very little left in the 2019 market. You know, it can be really tough, and this thing can change really, really quickly.
Yeah, and ideally you want to try to, I guess, keep the pieces intact enough over the next, what would we say, 2 weeks to hire a coach to at least wait to make any decisions before a new coach comes in, right? That's kind of beyond that's the important part of holding the pieces together. And then it comes down to who that new coach is, what to fit. I mean, who you could go in any way, right? Like, so you're looking at a roster where you have a couple sure things and a lot of not very, yeah, just complete unknowns, right? As it stands. So it's going to be an interesting situation, I guess, just how to play all that out. And yeah, Michigan's roster was already thin, and it could all of a sudden be a lot thinner.
And for people who don't know how this stuff goes down, like, what you need to understand is players on Michigan's roster right now are being recruited by other programs actively. Their parents are fielding phone calls from other schools where they were probably previously recruited, or there are relationships that exist with guys on that staff. That is happening right now. Players actively being recruited off the roster. That's just what happens nowadays. So, it's easy to sit here and say, Xavier Simpson and John Teske and Isaiah Livers and the remaining staff, they can hold this thing together until, it's figured out. But there's, when one guy makes a decision in his own best interest, suddenly a lot of people start making decisions in their own best interest.
Yep, that is a pretty good way to look at it. that is the reality of the situation that we are looking at right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk. Do you have anything else on the roster or recruiting?
No.
The plus side is that I think people don't have to worry about translating any more German news articles to figure out where Franz Wagner is going. I don't think he's going to Michigan, folks, after this. So, but shout out to my boy Zach Shaw. I saw him out there trying to get real translations.
I did not see that. That whole saga kind of played out while I was asleep here, given the time zone difference. So I woke up and seeing all sorts of German translations going on.
You did not miss much, my man. All right, so Beeline's legacy, Beeline's tenure, some of your fond memories. What do you got?
I think the thing that jumps out to me first is that he leaves after this season, which feels like a disappointment. And he won 30 games, went to the Sweet 16, which would have been crazy if you think back to when he arrived. What, they went 10-22 the first year. He made the NCAA tournament. Just making the NCAA tournament was a miracle. And if you look how much the program grew over that time, and really while sticking to the same principled approach. Obviously, things changed, coaches changed. They ran more ball screens, all this stuff, but it was a pretty impressive project, you could say, right? Like, yeah, from where it was to where it is now. I mean, easily, it's remarkable, really.
Yeah.
And I agree. Like, what else? I don't know. I know there's a lot of people that think he should retire at Michigan and be this, that, and this, and the other, but he's going to be the most accomplished Michigan basketball coach for now, right? I mean, that's pretty
much.
Yeah,
I mean, he's the guy. I think even with him leaving, you can still make the case that, if you're going to name the court after someone or do something like that, he's the guy. He's the best guy who's ever coached at that program. And, I get the sentiment that people wanted him to stay and blah, blah, blah. And, I've seen a lot of varying theories that, this is a he's moving on because of the state of college basketball, and that, this is a testament to what the game has become that someone of his caliber would move on. And look, it's definitely a dark day for college basketball. And I know for a fact that, John is really just kind of got unraveled every summer by the early entry process and the new transfer rules, and that it was just a lot for him to kind of wrestle mentally every year of basically having to rebuild a roster and start over, and suddenly these guys that he thinks he gets to develop, and that's what he wants to do for the job, and that's not part of the job really anymore.
Yeah.
That eats at him, no doubt.
I think that is a far bigger part of it than like the dirty recruiting stuff and X, Y, and Z. Like, obviously that's an issue, but I think that the idea of developing someone for a year, mm-hmm, and then replacing them with a one-year graduate transfer is just like kind of goes against everything he wants to accomplish coaching college, right? Like he talked like for first half decade he was here, it was just about developing guys, becoming seniors, and now the only way he can get a senior on the roster is a grad transfer, which is so I think that part is more along the lines of where the frustration level has probably changed in the last few years. Do you agree with that?
I do. But all that said, I still think that if John had guys returning every year, or if it was the heyday of college basketball, or if there wasn't the Southern District of New York as a character in college basketball at this point, even if it weren't all of those things, I still think John would have taken this job. He's a really unique character in he's not interested in being at Michigan so that they can name the court after him or unveil a statue of him or that he can be the all-time this and the all-time that and blah, blah, blah. He just rather go prove himself all over again. And he's always thought that he could coach in the NBA. And it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. He thinks he can coach in the NBA. And he thinks his system, he can figure it out. And if you give him the talent, he can go against the best players in the world. So that's it. Like, it's not that overly complicated. That's what's going on here. And I'll be curious to see what he does. You know, it's a really young team. Who knows what's going to happen in the draft lottery. But, you know, he's got a guy like Kevin Love's going to be really important because he's got a superstar on the roster who will listen to him. Nance is a kind of a good dude, a veteran who will listen to him. So he's going to have some veteran building blocks to install his stuff and hope that it creates this kind of the ecosystem that he wants to exist in. But it's going to be really hard. And I think it could go – there's certainly a chance it goes bad. You know, I had one guy in the NBA point out to me, John's probably going to lose more games next year than he did in, like, the last 8 years at Michigan or whatever, you know, do the math. But
I think he'll embrace that challenge. Like, I think he'll like that more than anything.
I don't disagree, but I also – there's certainly a chance. There's going to be some heart. When they're 20 and 45 – in March or whatever, and guys are tuned out, and he's still trying to coach games and draw stuff up and develop, and he wants to teach this and that in practice, and guys are unplugged, it could be really tough. It could be really tough. So we'll see. But there's also the chance that he's got some veterans. They bring in young talent, guys who, you know, you need to bring in certain personnel if you're going to bring in John Beilein as your coach, right?
Yep.
Are the Cavs smart enough to make sure that, you know, they bring in the right personnel guys? We'll see. His staff, it's going to be some huge hires in terms of dictating his success.
Yeah, I think he's got to go with a much more NBA-centric staff than – naming off all the Michigan assistants to bring along with him.
No, I mean, I could see him bringing one.
Three. You listed all of them.
Well, I think they're all possibilities. I mean, you can make a case for each. But, you know, who knows? But I agree with you. Legacy-wise, he's the best coach to ever lead Michigan, and I think it will be remembered that way. And, I mean, I got to know... You know, I was, as most readers out there at least know, like I was very fortunate to get to know him and his family really well for whatever it was, 6-7 years. And it was.
Are you moving to Cleveland?
I'm not moving to Cleveland. No. I got to cover the next era. But it was a very interesting transition from my second year when I tried to write a profile on him and talked to a million people and went all over the place to try to report it out. And he gave me a half an hour to talk about himself and did so begrudgingly. 2 years later, kind of being very much
And I'm not just saying this is me. I think it's overall him just dealing with the media and the plane crash and the heart stuff and all these. He's a very different character than the first guy that I first encountered. And, you know, much more open. It's far more publicly endearing. And it's just going to be fascinating to see how this all translates to the NBA. If I had to bet, I would say it'll work. I'm not sure I'd make the bet, though.
I wouldn't bet against him. That's
right, sure. Exactly. That's my point, yeah.
I think that the Cavs roster situation is not good, obviously. They're a terrible team. They're one of the highest odds in the lottery. But I think it's the fact that it's a young team kind of helps. Massaging superstar like that to start, right? So I think that gives him probably where he'd like to start. I don't think he'd like to start coming in a team where you're already facing a bunch of expectations mm-hmm. and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
This lets him really build his program his way, which is what he's done literally every stop of the way.
Right.
So that's kind of a better situation. Like, there's no expectations for the Cavs next year. And I think basically everywhere he's ever started a new job, that's been the situation. He's never been a program caretaker who comes in to a winning team, right? I mean, just about every step, it's come in, replace a fired coach, build the program your way, do X, Y, and Z, and all of a sudden you're winning. So it'll be interesting. It's kind of the ultimate test, right? Can he do it at the NBA level? He apparently thinks so. And I would certainly not bet against him after what I've watched over the last decade and a half.
Agreed. My real question, though, is can we get a reality show of Beeline trying to teach proper bounce passes and pivots to J.R. Smith in the final year of his, I think he's making $15 million next year.
Well, that would be must-see TV. Soup cans included or not?
Oh, man. Oh, God. It would be incredible. Make it
as
happen.
As far as the roster, though, I think having Mike Gansey as an assistant GM also totally. Probably helps and will help probably give him the trust that the system or that the players can be brought in to kind of build around his system, right? I mean, that's a huge luxury to have when you're going into a situation like this with a guy you really trust that high up in the organization.
Is Nick Stauskas under contract with them next year?
I believe he... I don't know the specifics of his deal. He finished the year with them, I believe, after that six teams in one day or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah. I have no idea on that. Okay, all right. Well, this was a ridiculous attempt at a podcast, but you got anything else for the people?
I do not. We'll try to maybe get more in-depth and maybe do another one here coming up soon. I'll be back soon enough and maybe not be recording it from the basement outside of breakfast at a conference room. So what are you going to do? It is what it is. We're just trying to bring you guys together here.
Yeah, and I'll be trying to cover a coaching change from the fairway at Bethpage. Yeah, I'm just your lowly golf writer, folks. I don't know why you'd listen to me for anything on basketball, but hopefully you come back for another pod soon. Make sure you read UM Hoops. I'm sure Dylan will do his best efforts to follow this transition. But more so, I can promise you this: when Michigan does decide on a new head coach, there won't be a better site that will have video breakdown of how that coach's system translates to Michigan than Dylan and UM Hoops. So subscribe. Make sure you check that out when it does come down the pike. As for me, check out The Athletic. I'll try to have coverage of the comings and goings of candidates, and good God knows what's about to happen here, so we shall see. So subscribe to The Athletic, and if you like golf, I got some stuff coming your way too. So rate the pod, share this with your friends, and be sure to tip your bartenders and your servers. Thanks, everyone.